is love.
And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. Both your financial and prayerful support has kept us on the air for over 40 years now. Before we get to our guest, Dr. Paul Chaloux, a reminder that on Tuesday, October the 17th, you can help us out by either participating in or sponsoring or donating to our golf outing. It'll take place on Tuesday, October the 17th at Tallamore Country Club in Ambler, Pennsylvania. Again, this year it's on a Tuesday, not a Monday, and the venue has changed over to Tallamore. Things will get started at 10 o'clock with registration, 11 o'clock lunch, 12 o'clock golf, 5 o'clock cocktails, 6 o'clock dinner. And if you're a golfer and want to join us, or you want to sponsor the event, you can download all the information on our website at inhissign.com. If you scroll to the bottom of the homepage, you'll see a link there to download the brochure with all the sponsorship opportunities and information on how to register for golf. If you have any questions, please, by all means, give Maureen a call here at 610-527-2906, 610-527-2906. And coming up on Monday, October the 30th, our president, Kathleen McCarthy, will be at the Malvern Retreat House for an evening entitled Spiritual Warfare 2023, How the Enemy Targets Our Families and How to Stop It. Now, the evening gets underway at 6 p.m. with adoration. They'll have a rosary and music at 6:30. Kathleen will give a presentation at 7:30 and then fellowship to follow. There is no cost for the event, but they are asking that you register at salvationofsouls.net. That's salvationofsouls.net, so you can let them know that they're coming. All this takes place at the Malvern Retreat House, the Family Life Center, again on Monday, October the 30th. All right, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Dr. Paul Chaloux. And Paul was born in Maine in 1960 to Paul and Dolly Chaloux, the oldest of six children. He grew up in Northern Virginia and attended public schools. After graduating with a chemical engineering degree from the University of Virginia in 1982, Paul worked for over 30 years as an engineer, manager, and strategist for IBM in upstate New York. While there, he also served as a catechist for 15 years at St. Columba Parish in Hopewell Junction, New York. In 2015, after earning a master's degree in religious education from Fordham University and retiring from IBM, Paul was accepted into the PhD program at the Catholic University of America to study catechetics with the goal of teaching future catechists. However, his plans changed dramatically when he was diagnosed with early-onset Parkinson's disease just after moving to Washington, D.C. for his studies. His new neurologist, after learning that Paul was studying theology, asked him why people suffer. He had no answer since it was not his intended field of study, but the question intrigued him enough to cause him to take up the subject. 5 years later, having earned his PhD in moral theology, Dr. Chaloux wrote Why We Suffer for general audiences as a follow-on to his dissertation, The Grace Concealed in Suffering, Developing Virtue and Beatitude, which he defended at the Catholic University of America on March the 5th, 2020. Dr. Chaloux currently teaches theology as an adjunct professor at Catholic University and serves as a catechist at St. Agnes Parish in Arlington, Virginia. He has been married for over 30 years to his wife, Sue, and they have four adult children and three granddaughters. Welcome to the show, Dr. Paul Chaloux. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
And as I read the whole bio, the reason being is that my wife's name is Sue. We've been married for 34 years. We have four children. I only have two grandchildren, a boy and a girl. And 2 years ago, I walked away from a 40-year IT career to pursue a career in addiction ministry. So it always amazes me how God seems to get us where He needs us to be, and often through these circuitous routes and through all different means, but we finally end up where we're supposed to be. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you.
So the book we're going to talk about is called Dying Without Fear. Again, written by Dr. Paul Chaloux, published by Sophia Institute, and available at Sophia's website as well as locally here in the Philadelphia market. You can visit the St. Jude shop. If they don't have it in stock, they should because it's relatively new. But if they don't have it in stock, they can be sure and pick up a copy for get a copy for you. So, in your own story, it sounds like you started to learn about suffering through your own experience. Are you still there, Doc?
I am.
Yeah, sorry about that. So you started to follow on this idea of catechetics. You mentioned in the introduction that you started to teach but didn't realize you didn't know as much as you thought you perhaps should have. So that's what prompted you to go back to Fordham, right?
Well, actually, not before that. Just learned stuff through reading the Lives of the Saints and the Catechism and the Scripture. And then after I'd been in catechism for like 15 years, then I went to Fordham.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that was on the way to this, it was based on a dream, really, that I had, that said very distinctly that I had to teach the teachers. And I really didn't understand what that meant at the time, but I thought that it meant I had to get a doctorate and I had to teach catechetics to future DREs. That's what I pursued. And when I finished my master's and got to go into my doctorate, I moved to Washington, D.C. And when I first got here, the doctor, I found out I had Parkinson's, and the doctor said to me, "Why do people suffer?" And I just didn't have any idea, but I'd never really thought about it. She said, "Well, you suffer, and what do you feel about it?" And I said, "Well, you know, I just live with it." And she said, "Well, you need to find out what people suffer, because people ask me all this all the time, and every doctor gets the same kind of questions, and nobody has an answer for it." So I mulled it over, and I worked on it in my doctorate, you know, writing papers about it, and in my thesis, and eventually changed my thesis, my dissertation to suffering, and here I am.
Yeah, and when I
expected,
I'm sorry. So, you know, suffering is a topic that a lot of people don't want to talk about, and especially don't want to talk about dying, and yet you open up the introduction, and as soon as I read it, I felt like I had gone back 30 years ago to when I first read the Road Less Traveled, and M. Scott Peck, the first line is, "Life is difficult," and then I open up your book, and the first line is, "Everyone suffers in life, and everyone dies," and I was like, oh, man. But it's true, right? Death and taxes. I think we spend so much time in our lives trying to avoid suffering instead of looking at the potential benefits and embracing it. And it's probably something that you started to learn with the saints. And then, of course, when it was brought on in your own life, I think it's one thing to read about it, right? It's another thing to start to experience it.
Oh yeah, I had overheard surgery twice before I had any of this. I've been nauseous for 20 years, based on hepatitis C, which I got from a second heart operation. All this stuff has just continually flowed for like 25, 30 years, and so I had a good experience with it. So that's all I had to offer with that.
Very good. So the book's basically divided into two parts, right? In the first part, you talk about the theology of suffering and dying, and then the second half of the book, we talk about the practical applications. And again,
right. And second half of the book is split into dying yourself and also caring for somebody that's dying.
Yeah,
because people have both experiences.
Absolutely. For those of us that, obviously, those that are listening, and you and I, we're still alive, so we've probably experienced the process of somebody else dying. My mother passed away last year. It was probably the first was the first immediate family member that we went through the process with. Certainly we all experience it, and that's why I think this book is so much needed, because like I said, everybody spends their whole life trying to avoid suffering. My background these days with an addiction ministry, the addicts spend so much time trying to avoid suffering that they not only maintain the suffering, but they throw heaps of suffering on top of it. Hopefully to the point where they finally have had enough suffering and they look to get help. But the suffering in the world today, because I think of the lack of spirituality, the lack of a belief in God or a faith in God, is just enormous, and we see it everywhere we turn.
Well, to start off this discussion, I'd say that suffering itself is a gift from God that tells us when we're lacking something, and when we stray from the path to Him. It also can be sometimes we suffer for the benefit of others. So there's those two things that it can be doing, and so you have to kind of discern what suffering is teaching you. Like an addict will find that. That he suffers no matter how long no matter how much he tries, he's going to suffer as long as he's addicted, because that doesn't solve the problem. And God is very patient. He will cause you to suffer forever until you die if you don't adjust your lifestyle. You'll find what you need.
Yeah. So as we mentioned in the first half of the book, you talk about the theology of suffering and death. And one of the chapters in particular jumped out at me, and the suffering and its four tasks. And you just kind of talked a little bit about that. Like I say, people try to avoid it, but if we embrace it, and it sounds like who would ever want to embrace suffering? But it to your point that you just made, and I had never looked at it that way, that the suffering is a result of you're missing something that you need. One of the examples that you use is hunger pangs that can be looked at as suffering, and it's your body letting you know that you need to eat, or when you don't feel well because there's something else going on with your body, an illness or what have you, that you suffer, and that suffering lets you know that maybe you need to call the doctor and figure out what's going on with your body. So I think the natural inclination to run is not to our benefit.
So there are four tasks of suffering that lead you from sin to salvation. First one is it teaches you proper self-love by teaching you, it makes you be more... makes you... consider what is beneficial and what's not beneficial for you. And it does it through simple feedback loops. Like if you're hungry, you eat. And if you drink too much, you get a hangover. Things like that. If you're mean to somebody, they'll be angry with you. That make you stop doing that. Each one of those things gives you a different virtue, and it takes away vice, and so therefore it lines you up for the second task with suffering, which is to be aligned you with God. And then the third task is unleash your love of neighbor, and the last task is to redemptive love, which teaches you to suffer, is to suffer for the benefit of others. Those four tasks, it will lead you to those four tasks, and particularly to in eternal suffering, you get those four tasks, and you can't really get to heaven without those tasks. You need to understand those things.
Yeah, and it especially on that fourth task, I think about what we may have learned from the sisters when we were coming up in school, that you know something would hurt, something would bother you, and you hear that term offer it up, and it's like, offer it up, what does that mean?
Offer it up, I have a particular point on that one, because offer it up is a very, very negative thing in a lot of people's minds. But what it means is that you're giving up your illness, you're aligning it with Christ, and by doing so, you're assuming that it does something for somebody else's benefit. It's not for no reason, it's for somebody else's benefit. You don't always know who it is that benefits from it, but it is for somebody else's benefit. That's what offering it up is, meaning you're willing to suffer for somebody else. And that's redemptive.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like we say, so many people try to avoid suffering altogether, but when we do and we offer it up, then we align it, as you said, with Jesus Christ's own suffering, that the redemption, state rightly that we may not know who the beneficiaries are, yet at other times, I think every once in a while, God will let us know that whatever it is that we've gone through and embraced it and offered it up, maybe even for a particular individual or a particular cause, that once in a while we actually are given the gift of knowing that our suffering did have a positive impact on someone or something.
Right. I feel like that in my own personal situation.
Yeah.
It's allowed me to write these books and therefore has maybe touched a few people on the way.
No, and I think you'll touch quite a few people along the way, because like you said, everybody suffers, everybody dies, everybody needs to pick up this book. Again, our guest today is Dr. Paul Chaloux. The book is Dying Without Fear, published by Sophia Institute. When it comes to dying, and you have two chapters here, Rethinking Dying and Terminal Suffering, and then another, Rethinking Death. Aren't dying and death the same thing?
Well, no. Dying is the process of going through it, and you know, there's only two ways you can die. You can die of illness, or you can die of injury. And injury is fast, and illness can be very fast or very slow, depending on which kind of illness you have. Now, 86% of the people in the United States die of terminal illness, which means they die of some kind of bodily breakdown, like cancer or an organ breaking down. And those people have a real benefit over those that die instantly, because, and they may not think that, but they do, because they have an opportunity to adjust. They have an opportunity to deal with the things that they leave behind and their legacy and their spiritual attainment and their relationship with their families and everything else. They can fix all of that in the time that they know, in the time from when they get diagnosed with trauma and the time that they get in the time that they actually die. So terminal illness is really a benefit. Now death really defines life, because without death you couldn't really have the kind of life you have today. Because if nobody died, then the world would get overpopulated very quickly, and you'd run out of resources. And then people would have to die because they wouldn't have any resource to eat. Right? Also, things are valuable because they're rare and they can be lost. Because life can be lost, it's valuable. And so, if you think about rethinking death, it means that you're thinking about what would happen if there was no death. Well, there could be any population growth, because there wouldn't be room for it, so there would be no love, there would be no families. All those things change because there's death. And when people think about that, they don't usually think about that, right? Because nobody thinks about death as they have to. They don't have to, but you come to a time and you get into a situation that you will think about death, because you've been terminally ill, you're terminally ill, or you're chronically ill, it's a means of conversion. Because when you get to that, you start thinking about those existential questions. That's all.
Yeah, I've seen that with at least one family member of my own who was a proclaimed atheist until she attended my mother's funeral. It was my mother's sister. And following that funeral, my aunt was, she's in her mid-70s now, I guess, and now all of a sudden she's asking questions. You know, it's one thing to be, an atheist and a non-believer when things are going well, but, you know, to your point, everybody's going to die, and then it's, well, then what? And
right, then what?
Yeah, and I think that's where the fear comes in. I remember, you know, in years past when I was younger and before I had the faith that I have today, I couldn't think about it. I would start thinking about death and what's heaven. Well, first of all, am I going to get to heaven? Because at the time I wasn't doing a lot of the things that I should have been doing. And then even if I do get there, what are you going to do all day? You know, do we eat? Do we sleep? And, you know, we can run all these things through our human brains. And because we can only look at things, I guess, because of our own experience that, you know, just the whole idea of this is going to be completely different is enough to bring on fear. So I don't think it's so much the fear of when you're going to die or how you're going to die. It what happens after you're dead and what comes next, at least for me, generated a bunch of fear.
Some people actually fear dying, the actual, the pain and all that go through it, That's a lot of what people fear. But you're right. The end game is the most fundamental piece.
So,
the way I describe heaven is like a divine internet. It's beatific vision. It's seeing God, but it's all that you see, all that's good and all that's true in the universe. And it's all from the imagination of God. And you don't have any bandwidth problems. You don't have any downtime. It's all, it's all good and all the time. And so you have access. You know, if you get, people get really intoxicated with the internet. Just think about the beatific vision. It's going to be 20 times, 2 million times better than that.
Very good. The chapter on particular judgment, heaven, hell, and purgatory, there's a prayer that we say in a men's group. It's the prayer of Pope Clement the 11th, and in there we mention the last four things. And as a result of that, I've contemplated them from time to time. And when we do, it changes our lives, I think, because we know that it's coming. What's your prerogative on the final four things, the last four things?
Well, the last four things are there for a reason. I mean, the first one's death, and death is necessary for judgment. It has to be finalized. And so then judgment defines all, it really is the motivating factor for all morality. And then there's heaven and there's hell. Heaven is with God, and heaven and hell is without God. And so you can imagine what the difference would be. One of the things that a lot of people mistake is that they don't understand that what makes heaven what it is the rules in heaven. It God tells you how to live and what will make you happy, and if you follow those, then you're happy. In hell, there's no rules. There's just power. And the devil's a lot more powerful than us, it's going to be a very negative situation because everybody's looking out for their own good there, and instead of looking out for other people. And if you can imagine a world where nobody cares about anybody else, that's what it would be like.
Mm.
That's a very scary thing, I think.
Yeah. Sounds a little bit about what this world of, that we're living in now seems like sometimes. We got a couple of minutes before we go to the break. The last chapter in the theology of suffering and death, you've entitled The Last Day. And I'm assuming that's
right.
The day, our last day on this planet.
Well, it's the last day to the planet in general. The world ends, and God makes a new heaven and a new earth. And he's going to live in that world with us, and it's not going to be any procreation because everybody that's going to be there will be chosen to be there from their actions on Earth. And so it'll be a tool to pull up nothing that you have here will be left. It'll be gone. It's not going to be any for something better.
Hmm. Something to look forward to. We're approaching the bottom of the hour, and rather than get into the second half of the book, maybe we can take our break now, and when we come back, we'll talk about the dying with grace and dealing with the dying and death of loved ones. Again, our guest today is Dr. Paul Chaloux. We're talking about his book, Dying Without Fear, published by Sophia Institute, available at Sophia's website as well as locally here at the St. Jude Shop. They'll be more than happy to get it for you if they don't have it in stock. So we're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
We thank God for our one, holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church, where Jesus remains present to us until the end of the age, in word and in sacrament. Catholic Radio shares in the ministry of the Church to proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth, and in his sign Catholic Radio has been doing so for over 30 years. Kathleen McCarthy and in his sign have been empowered by the Holy Spirit to bring the fire of God's healing love to the world through Catholic radio and the internet. With God's grace, his word goes out, healing hearts and transforming lives. In his sign, proclaims the culture of life loud and clear in a culture of death. The ministry's mission is to evangelize, catechize, and to be a voice for those who have no voice, proclaiming the truth that will set all people free. To our faithful family and friends who stand with us, thank you for being missionaries with us by supporting In His Sign Catholic Radio. Without your monthly support of prayer and financial giving, our mission would not be able to continue. Our mission voice would be silenced. To our new listeners, please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA, 19010. Or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston. And again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. I've mentioned a couple of times today and just one more time that our golf outing is less than 2 weeks away on Tuesday, October the 17th. You can get all the information on our website at inhissign.com and scroll to the bottom of the homepage and download the little brochure there. Has all the information you need in order to become a sponsor, to play golf, to just join us for dinner, whatever part of the day you can make it. I will be there. I've actually got my father and brother-in-law playing golf this year, so I look forward to seeing all of you out there this year. Our guest today is Dr. Paul Chaloux. We're talking about his book, Dying Without Fear, published by Sophia Institute. In the first half of the show, we've talked about the theological basis of suffering and dying without really getting into a whole lot of deep theology, which is great. And but in the second half here, we're going to talk about dying with grace and then dealing with the dying and death of loved ones. You have an interesting chapter here, Doctor, that says, chapter 10, what kills us? You know, and I don't know if this is how your mind works or what have you, but you break it down into these slices. And I never would have come up with that myself. But when you look at it, you know, we're only going out as a result of so many things, and you've outlined them here pretty good, starting with the terminal illness and then and injuries. And so, or I guess you start out with injuries and then talk about some of the other things that can cause our deaths.
Right. Well, 6% of the people in the United States die of injury. In the third world, it's twice that because people aren't healed from their injuries, and it's not as much safety requirements. But so very few people die of injury, 6%. Then everybody else dies of illness. Now, illness breaks down into three different categories. First category is that people who die from insufficient nutrition. That's a very small number in the United States. It's less than 1%, even not only 3% in third world countries. So most people don't die of nutrition. The second thing is they die of infectious diseases. And that's a very small number in the United States too, less than 6%. But in third world countries, it would be like 30 or 40%. So there's a lot of difference there. And even in COVID, it didn't get much over 6%. And then the last thing is terminal illness, which is dying of cancer or organ breakdown, like heart attack or Parkinson's or something like that. And that's 86% of the people in the United States. So if you die quickly, it's one of those things that you don't have any time to plan for that death. You don't have any time to reconcile with God. You don't have time to reconcile with your family. You don't have time to plan for your death. You don't have time for any of that stuff. Now, of course, at the same time, it's a lot quicker probably. If you get hit by a bus, it doesn't take very long most of the time. So there's that trade-off. But most people aren't ready to die instantly. And it's very hard on the families, right, when people die instantly because they have no way, they have to plan to make up all that gap that person lived in. And it's very difficult. So to me, it's a lot better to die of a terminal illness than a quick injury or a infectious disease, but even the infectious disease can be delayed. So if you had tuberculosis, it can take a long time. My mm-hmm. grandmother had that, that's how I describe it. And after that, I start talking about treatment of the terminally ill, because most people recognize as death, because you know they think about how they're going to die, and they think about want to die in their sleep, or they want to die surrounded by loved ones or whatever, and that can only happen with a terminal illness, to die with loved ones around them. So chapter 11 describes the choices of treatment for the terminally ill and the ethics involved in each. So there's one way. One thing you have to do is to fight it all the way. You know, you continue to try all the different kinds of treatments that they'll throw up at you, and until you eventually die. The second one is to embrace your death through hospice care. And that just means that you throw off all the treatment except for painkillers and symptom relief, and you accept your death. And then there's also sedation, terminal sedation, which is they'll put you out and you won't wake up. They won't feed you. And the last one is that you can actually, in many states now, you can request help in dying through assisted suicide. Now, the only one of these that really works for people that are interested in reconciling with God is the hospice care one. The other one, the first one, that fighting it all the way doesn't leave time and energy to do that, and sedation doesn't allow you to do that because you're sedated and obviously position this as a suicide, you're not even thinking about that. So that's that. So if you die well, you got to balance three things. You got to balance living, because you're still living until the point you die. You'll plan on your death, and you've got to plan, and you got to decide how much to fight it, because you need to do some things just to stay functional. For instance, I had brain surgery back in October that stopped my tremors and allowed me to have a little more functionality. So you need to do those kind of things to keep functional, but you have to balance all those things, and that's an important balance to do, and a lot of people think about that.
Yeah, so you hear about people that they'll throw out the statement, if the disease doesn't kill you, the cure will. And obviously talking about cancer and intensive chemo and those types of things. So it does. I think it's a balance, right, of, how much are you willing to suffer either from the disease or the cure before possibly choosing the hospice option. And I think that's probably the one that we see the most, in at least amongst people I know, those in the Catholic or Christian circle, where they'll fight it as best they can for as long as they can. And, my mother was in that case. And then when finally when didn't look like there was going to be any coming back, that it was time to start the hospice care.
Right, care versus cure, right?
Very good. And obviously the last two options, sleeping through it. I can't imagine telling a doctor, hey, go ahead, put me to sleep, and
will do it.
Yeah. And I'll just linger here until the body gives out. And of course the physician assisted suicide, which I don't get. I guess people can, dealing with addicts, it's almost we call it suicide on the layaway plan, that where, people may not actually have the thought that they want to kill themselves, but they're basically doing it. And I can see where somebody might get to the point where they're in such pain or what have you, perhaps, that they just want to have their lives ended. But I think that's one of the purposes of this book. When you read about the death and the suffering and the positive impact it can have, and it's not only on the individual that's suffering and headed towards death, but those that watch them, as the witnesses of it, as well as the benefits that we talked about earlier, that the redemptive suffering that we can offer to the Lord to distribute the graces from it however he sees fit.
Well, the thing about assisted suicide is that it ignores the fact that God has a plan for you.
Right.
And what if God had said that, in the last day of your life, he was going to bring somebody that you had been estranged from for a long time to see you, and that you committed suicide right before he came? That would be awful, right? That would be just awful.
Mm.
So you got to let God play it out and let him see and let him do what he wants to do with your death. Because every death is planned, and it's to maximize the salvation of somebody, either you or one of the onlookers. enabled. So physician assisted suicide takes that out of God's hands, kind of, and I think it's detrimental, and it's very selfish too, because you know, there are people that we rely on you, and you don't always know who they are.
Mm.
And it could be somebody that just sees you every day, walk down the street, and they get used to you, and then they don't see you after that, and they wonder.
Yeah. So if you do decide that you're gonna fight this thing, Chapter 12 deals with living well with a terminal disease, and you know, it'd be one thing for somebody to try to write a book about it that's not experiencing it, but can only imagine what it was like the day that you learned that you had the early onset of Parkinson's. I'm sure the first thought...
It wasn't pleasant.
No, I'm sure it wasn't, and I'm sure the first thing that came to your mind was not, how am I going to live well with this, but something that I'm assuming came over time. And
yeah, it came over time. I mean, at first I didn't believe it, right? But you feel it after a while. You feel total degradation. You know, I have trouble finding sentences sometimes, and you probably hear that on this call, and those kind of things. And so it makes it very real to me, and makes it a lot different than it was before I started feeling the effects.
And then when you do start to feel the effects, is it that you're just putting on a good face, or is it because you've actually embraced this now and you know that God has some purpose for it? No matter what God allows to happen and with his permissible will, and he allows suffering and what have you, that it's always to bring about a greater good. And I'm assuming...
Right. I've embraced that.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you not if you're doing all this?
Yeah. But it still doesn't make it easy. And, you know, as we're talking, I'm here, and my engineer's a good friend of mine, and his uncle, who I've gotten to know over the years, is battling fighting the same fight you are with Parkinson's. And I hope he's listening. If not, the show's recorded. We'll get Mike to... be sure to listen. But he's another one that's fighting a good fight. He's didn't like to fight physically, and ends up the one doctor recommended that he get in a ring and start boxing, and it, you know, would help with his balance and what have you. So not that he's actually getting in there and trying to knock somebody out, but to go through the motions and the exercises for it was at least for a while there was a great benefit to him.
Yeah, I was
going to
do that, and I now ride a bike instead.
There you go. So, once you've learned that you have this, and you're in the middle of the fight, you start talking about planning for life after death. And I go back to my in-laws, and I think there is a third cause of death, and I was going to mention this earlier, but my father-in-law basically died of a broken heart. His wife died. My mother-in-law died on a Friday. He died 5 days later on a Tuesday, and there was nothing physically wrong with him. He didn't have a terminal illness. He didn't suffer an injury. He was dead in bed, and so...
Yeah, but, I suppose it happens sometimes.
Yeah, but what he did, and it was so beneficial to us, was that all the documentation was in an easy spot to find it. Both of the funeral masses had been planned. Well, now that it ended up only being one funeral because they died so close together, we were able to have one funeral for both of them at the same time. But they had all their... readings picked, hymns picked, those types of things. And it was such a blessing, especially when you're going through that with a loved one, to not have to make those decisions or analyze a whole bunch of things in order to come to decisions. When it's all laid out for that, at least for us, it was a blessing.
Oh, yeah. My mother died on May 8th, 2022, so right in the middle of this writing this book. So you know, I was going through all that, and she had not done any of this because she didn't plan for this. But you know, you've got seven items that I think you need to plan for. The state of your soul, so you have to go to confession, you have to go get anointed and sick, you have to get baptized if you're not Catholic. Resolving relationship issues, you got to provide for your dependents, you got to define medical direction, you got to do asset dispersal, you're going to do all that stuff. You have to pass on special knowledge. Like if you have a business that you're running that nobody else has to run, or if you know a recipe that nobody else has or anything, you have to pass that on because it's not going to do any good in the grades. And the last one is the funeral plans. So, you know, I think if you think about those seven things, it makes a difference.
And the
financial records is important. And so good to put everything to beneficiary. All your accounts have beneficiary. Therefore, you're not just probate and all that.
Yep. Yeah, and then that we learned in going through that particular scenario. And thank God for my father-in-law. He had it all pretty much lined up. There was very few things that I had to go through probate. In the doctor, in the last section of the book, you talk about dealing with the dying and death of loved ones, and
right.
Just the chapter headings here. You think about the pain that's associated with the death of an innocent child, or I think in my father's case, you have a chapter here. Why did my parent die when I was young? He was an orphan at 13. Or why did my spouse die? And The first chapter, actually, in this part of the book, though, chapter 14, the suicide of a loved one, is one that unfortunately seems to be happening more and more all the time. And in this, I would lump, and I don't know if you break it out, maybe you do in chapter 15 with the unexpected death of a loved one, but the number of young people today that are dying from drug overdoses and related situations is just incredible.
So I talk about those two things in chapter 14 and 15. In chapter 16 and through 21, talk about issues for the terminally ill, and because that's most people. And I use examples from my own family to discuss all those items, why my child died, why my parent died, and all that, because I had experience with it, and I had seen what happened, you know, like 10, 15, 20 years down the line.
Mm.
And so you can make assessments different than it feels a lot different, you know, 20 years down the line than it does at the point of it happening. And so you can start seeing where the benefit was. And that's what I try to cover. So I don't know if you want to go through the five needs of the terminally ill and what you have to do if you're a caregiver.
That'd probably be a great place to go. We've got about 7 minutes left, and I think for those of us that have loved ones that are either already in the process of dying or will be in the not too distant future, I think it would be a great help.
So the five needs of the terminal ill are their physical pain. They need to manage their physical pain. Uncertainty about their medical prognosis. They need to understand what's going to happen to them and when. Concern about their purpose in life. They need to know that there's meaning still in their life. They need concern about their social status, that people still love them, and concern about what will happen after they die, their spiritual status. Those are the five things that you have to worry about helping them with if you're a caregiver, if you're the prime caregiver. And those five things make a difference in, like, finding the living arrangements for a dying loved one, because if you can't help them with their physical pain or with their medical prognosis or like that, you need to go to a professional place to do that. And a lot of times people, you know, think that they're going to be best off at home, but it's not always the case. In many cases, it's better off in an institution where they have, they can manage their pain and they can meet with other people, that their peers with, and things like that. So, and particularly if it's a Catholic place that has spiritual control help, that's a good place to go. And then why am I innocent child die? That was the first question I got asked in the first interview I had on dying in the first book I had, which was Why Old People Suffer. And it, the reason why the innocent child dies is because every person has a purpose. Every person has a purpose, and a child born with a fatal disability has a purpose, and that purpose is to love and to teach the other people that, that are around them to love. And they usually do it very well because people will love the dying child, and they will, you know, they'll change their life a lot of ways because they are caring about something more than themselves, and that's good. And the child itself is, you know, before, if they die before the age of reason, for say 7 or 8 years old, they're going to go to heaven anyway because they have no personal sin. So their job is to bring people with them. And that's why they that's why I believe that innocent child dies.
Yeah, we have.
I think the other reason is stupid. I think that's a very good reason why.
Yeah, we've had a situation, and not in my own family, but friends of ours who had a young child that passed, and it was an injury. It wasn't illness, and some 12, 13 years later now, the amount of good that has been done in his name and that child's name, and the bonds of friendship and what have you that have been formed as a result, you know, you can't measure that. And it's truly, I believe, only because of our Catholic faith. Because if God's not in the center of this, then, you know, it all means nothing. But when God is in the middle of it, it means everything. And, you know, our president here of the radio station, Kathleen McCarthy, when that that young boy died, I remember she went to visit them. And, you know, she talked about how thin the veil was between us and our loved ones. And, you know, we're only on this earth for a short time to begin with when you compare it, like you said, to all of eternity and the beatific vision. So I know that's not a consolation to somebody who's lost a child perhaps, but in reality, it's really not all that long until we are reunited. But again, that's only because of our faith. And I don't personally, I don't know how people that don't have faith, don't have a belief in God, you know, survive
they
some
suffer.
Of these things. Yeah. And they suffer
they
needlessly
suffer.
Or they suffer without purpose, right?
Right. Well, there's always a purpose, and the purpose is to bring them back. And
yeah.
And if they many times they will come back because what else is there for them?
Right. Well, we've got just about a minute left, Doctor. Again, our guest today is Dr. Paul Chaloux. The book we've been talking about is Dying Without Fear, published by Sophia Institute, available at Sophia's website. And locally here at the St. Jude Shop. Any final words for us, Doctor, before we need to let you go?
Well, I think just one thing. I have another book coming out in January. It's called Heaven's Currency. It's about love. The third book of this trilogy, and it'll be available in November. It'll be available to purchase on it to be the press in November.
Very good. Well, I'm sure the reps at Sophia, Mary Beth and company, will be in touch with us when it's published, and maybe we'll have to have you back again.
Okay, that'd be great.
All right. Again, Dr. Paul Chaloux, Dying Without Fear. Doctor, thank you so much for the full hour. It may not have been easy under the circumstances, but we certainly appreciate it, and please know that you're in my prayers.
Thank you.
All right. God bless you. For our listeners, thank you once again for whatever part of the 2 hours you could be with us today. You could sense the I don't know if weakness is the right word, but in Dr. Chaloux's voice, and you know, hard to you know, put yourself in somebody else's shoes, and during the conversation, of course. understanding that, you know, he's going through his own journey, but willing to share that with us. We mentioned in the 4 o'clock hour talking about saints and sinners and storytelling, and you know, he by telling his own story and being willing to share it with other people, gives the rest of us insight, you know, into not only what he's going through, but perhaps what our own loved ones are going through, and maybe what we ourselves are going through, or what we may have to deal with in the not so distant future. So I think it takes a lot of courage to, you know, to put it out there and let folks know exactly what's going on in your own, you know, physical life, and to be able to combine that with your Catholic faith and your belief in God, and being a witness as to how you suffer well and eventually die well, I think is a benefit to all of us. Because, like it says in the, like I said, the first line in the introduction of this book, everyone suffers in life and everyone dies. You can try your best to avoid it, but sooner or later, it's going to come. And to be able to look for the benefits in that suffering. Again, you may not want to go through it. You may not know why you're going through it. But in the end, and as Dr. Sulu points out in the book, a lot of times that suffering will bring about growth in a particular virtue, and maybe one that you're seriously lacking in. And maybe this was the only way that God could bring it about. So thank you again for whatever part of the 2 hours you were with us. I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. Until then, I pray that God will hold you.